Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. This is the big show, the main show, the news and cues portions of our fleet. I'm Ken Napsa.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and I love the idea that news and cues would be the actual name of a ship in a fleet.
Especially some of the great High Republic names we're being introduced to. Like, I'm on board the news and cues.
Yeah.
It's an information ship.
Yeah, exactly. It's an information ship, but then also questions implies, like, not only are we delivering news, but also, if you have any questions, we'll load them up in the cargo bay and we'll take them to whoever needs them.
It's a research ship, indeed. Yeah, okay. I want this in our Star Wars, in real Star Wars now, too.
Yeah. And we can even, put out a survey and have people in the galaxy name the ship, just like the whole Bodie McBoatface incident.
Bodie McBoatface. That will work out. Oh, man. Hey, well, everybody, welcome to this show. A lot of fun, a lot of things to get to. And as always, news that broke last week after we uploaded our episode, because that's the way it is. We got some great questions all coming your way. But before we get to it, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download, my friends, and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Yeah.
I had hash browns this morning, Joseph, if you want to have an overshare of information for you in the audience. Got my throat. But that's not all. Audible is not all. We have more.
That's right. We have an offer for hash browns. No, someday we'll have a hash brown offer. But this week and every week, we have an offer from Inside Editions. They are a publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books. Inside Editions is offering 35% off across their website with a special Force Center code. And you can get a discount by entering that code, which is FC35, or you can visit the website with the specific link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we are continuing to recommend a new book that's coming out on May 4th. I think this is going to be a really great book. I think it's going to be a really great Star Wars day of May 4th. This book is Star Wars : Galactic Baking. It's got recipes like Mustafarian Molten Lava Cakes, Cloud City Marshmallows, Life Day Cake, Lothcat Kibble, which I think is for humans, but it might be for animals. I don't know yet. And of course, a Keshian Spice Bread, a Dagobah Bog Pie. Which I'm sure is delicious, but also sounds like maybe an insult that someone in the Star Wars universe would call someone else.
Yeah. I am intrigued by this Lothcat Kibble now because, one, it could be for my Chihuahua down the line, or two, I asked this in my own personal Discord not too long ago. Who has tried dog food in their life? And I was one of those kids that was like, well, it looks good for the dog. Let me try it. Not an incident. I might be trying it anyway. Either way you cook it or prepare it.
That's right. I will make it for my imaginary pet and set it out. In fact, my wife picked up a Lothcat at the last time we were at Target. So I can make a weird TikTok video of the stuffed Lothcat eating the Lothcat kibble. Anyway, check out Inside Editions. Ton of great Star Wars books, in particular Star Wars Galactic Baking. The code is FC35.
All right. Use that on us, man. We're trying to give you all these sweet offers to dive more into Star Wars because we love you all here, our Force Center friends. We like to catch up to life adventures, Star Wars adventures. We are past, what is it, about a year, Joseph, roughly, that's been this lockdown in SoCal and to varying degrees, and it's changed and waned, and a lot of discussion about it, I get it. But for the most part, you and I have been hunkered down, and our voices across Zoom have been the only comforts and the only connections to the outside world.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different words for it. Stay at home, lockdown, going through the pandemic, safer at home. I like hunkering.
Hunkering.
Did you live through the great hunkering, young people will say to us someday? I'm like, yeah, hunkered. Hunkered for over a year. It is. It's really a fascinating time to be getting into all the little anniversaries, right? I think we might have passed the anniversary of the last day that you and I recorded in person, or maybe we're just about to. But I know for me, a couple days from now, March 10th, is just seared in my memory. I had a meeting with my friend Laser about shows. Then I stopped at a Target and almost bought an action figure, but didn't. And then went out in the evening with a couple friends, and enough was swirling around then of like, I had that in the back of my mind of, is this my last day in the world for a while? And then the fact that it was the last day because I even remember, like, I want to take a picture of that funny C-3PO action figure, but I shouldn't touch it just in case.
Just in case.
Don't touch 3PO just in case, kids. I'm glad that there is definitely a light at the end of the tunnel with all the vaccines out there. So I am hopeful for less hunkering in the future.
Love to hunker down less, though. It's also a little bit, I've learned, my natural state. I'm okay with this. A little bit of Luke on Octo, though. The lesson was Luke shouldn't have stayed on Octo. So maybe that's a lesson for me too, as well. any good Star Wars life adventures amongst all the anniversaries?
Yeah, today, that's Freudian. I was going to say last week was a little rough, and I started saying today. today is going to be a little rough. I don't know. I hope not. Anyway, last week was a little rough, just a lot of stuff going on along with the world. But, you know, this was my weird Star Wars adventure. I didn't have any real Star Wars adventures outside of reading Into the Dark, which we're going to be discussing, a great Claudia Gray High Republic book. But it was kind of fascinating that, you know, the fun MCU journey with WandaVision which I think is so tied to Star Wars because, you know, Star Wars and MCU are both kind of doing this big entry into what is going to be the new world of this kind of franchise storytelling and world building because of Disney Plus. And there's the big finale of WandaVision, which I really enjoyed. I enjoyed the whole series. I thought the finale was great. And then there was this great conversation that emerged about expectations versus just enjoying what the show told you. I can't remember who, so I apologize for not having the exact information, but either the director or the showrunner had a quote floating around of saying, like, I hope people aren't disappointed because they got all of these predictions about who's going to pop up. This means this, and we're just going to finish telling our story, and I hope people aren't disappointed. And I just thought it was really great to see the conversation that people were having and really connecting it to Star Wars, and a couple of people kindly connecting it to the way we try to talk about stuff of, you know, this is why we have speculate responsibly. This is why we say, you know, about, you know, in particular, I think I started bringing it up in terms of my journey with the prequels of once I finally stopped rewriting them in the head to be to make them be the way I thought they were going to be. That's when I really enjoyed them. And they opened up like beautiful little flowers because I engaged with the story I was presented with. And that conversation has been active in the Star Wars community because of the high expectations and predictions when it comes to the sequel trilogy movies in particular. But it was great to see because of WandaVision, it was almost like the fever broke and the conversation became a big cross-cultural one.
That's a great way to see it. That's kind of what I've been feeling too. And someone who has not yet watched WandaVision for no big reasons other than dealing with grief is it's a big topic in our house right now. So we're waiting on that one.
Understandably.
The fever breaking and not that I'm like, ha, finally it's hit other areas, but just like, these are good conversations. So fascinated by, you bring that up. I think it was interesting to kind of watch this weekend and all this all nine episodes of WandaVision, it started to build, it seemed.
Yeah. And I think I was really, really, happy for that I think a lot of people were really on board with the, like, yeah, it's great if you predict a character might show up, but we're watching it for the characters that we know are there, not for the ones who might show up.
Yeah. No, I had a lot of, and look, once art is out of the box, it's maybe your art to interact with. So you can find inspirations or you'd be disappointed with just be hurt by parts of the story. I think those are all valid conversations. Some I've had in the last couple of weeks with friends offline. I'm there for all of that. But I also think just in terms of Star Wars, man, our pal Mark Riley keeps saying it's like a fine wine that just keeps not just getting better with age, but opening up to you different flavors, different hints of this, hints of that. And I love you in Star Wars like a fine glass or bottle of wine.
I think that's great. I think I celebrate it when somebody's like, you know, I took another sip of Attack of the Clones and I really appreciated the undernotes of dark cherry. Great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what were your life or Star Wars adventures? Did you sip some Star Wars wine?
Other than the Force Center work, which is so funny. I know you and I refer to it as that, and it's great work. Great work if you can get it, kids. Working with Light of the Jedi, or excuse me, well, technically working with Light of the Jedi. Anytime you read a High Republic book, it goes back to that, I think. But Into the Dark. We're going to review it on Thursday. Well, we say review, but really discuss it. I mean, it is, it's a really philosophical book among many other fun and zippy things too. But, so it just got me thinking a lot about life, a lot about Star Wars, and had some good discussions too off air with some folks. I won't reveal their names, lest they, face scorn because they are bigger in the Star Wars community, but having just a discussion about how we take in Star Wars and how that's changed, matured, grown, and just not right or wrong, but just become different for a lot of us. A big departure point for me was Last Jedi, even though thanks in large part to the conversations you, Jennifer, and I were having on Force Center and even Jedi Alliance I've talked about before, of just starting to engage with Force Awakens a little bit different than I did going into the movie. Rogue One too, but by Last Jedi, you were faced with what that movie was trying to do and how much change. And it's really been highlighted by you and I going on the Clone Wars journey.
Yeah.
And seen episodes that I remember loving, but then loving them now in a different way. Or remember going, God, not that episode. And now just going, man, how did I miss all this? And not to beat myself up, but just it's grown. And so that's just been fun. And that was my Star Wars Adventures week, having kind of those discussions off air with a good friend in the Star Wars business of just like, you can't deny it's changed. And not saying we're right and they're wrong, but then that's why I communicate about Star Wars less with some of the people in my past, because we're not talking about the same things sometimes. And that's not bad on them and good on me. It's just we're at a different table.
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes back to choice, which is, you know, such a great Star Wars theme of, if you really wanted it to be a specific way and it wasn't, and, mm-hmm. you know, you can choose to be upset about that. You can choose to, you know, discuss it and write some fan fiction and process your feelings, you know, or you can choose to just go like, okay, that expectation, you know, doesn't matter. What's in the thing in front of me that I love, and what can I find joy in that thing in front of me? It's all choices and degrees of choices.
Yeah. Choices in Star Wars, pretty valuable. So honestly, not to get deep and philosophical, but that's also kind of what we love doing here over at times. We also love having silly stuff. But that's kind of my Star Wars adventure last week. Less playing with toys and more discussing what Star Wars means and how it changes over the course.
Yes, we had a philosophical toy time.
Yes. Yes. Though I'll tell you what, I finished that Y-Wing for my Lego build this weekend, and that Moroff minifig is just climbing the charts as my favorite Lego minifig for Star Wars. So,
oh, that is so great. That's so great.
Yeah. So Star Wars and life adventures to be had anywhere you look. We're going to dive into Star Wars news, and we're leading off with something, Joseph, that, as is the way, just the way our recording schedule is, and we kind of can't really change that recording schedule with other things going on in our lives and careers. But this one was actually after our episode was Tuesday morning. I believe it really kind of came out. We record on Mondays, release episodes Tuesdays and Thursdays. This one broke, and nothing we could do but discuss it now. And that is Kenobi adds Indira Varma to the cast. This is one of those not confirmed, but comes from a pretty legit source. Deadline had the exclusive first, saying that the actor probably best known for her high-profile roles in Game of Thrones as Ilaria Sand and Rome, among other things, is reportedly set to join Kenobi in an undefined role. So that's kind of it. It's kind of the story, Joseph. That's it. It just expires a lot of expectations, but also thoughts and speculations, hopes. So let's dive into Indira Varma, another Game of Thrones actor joining the Star Wars universe. What do you think?
Yeah, no, she is a great actor from everything that I've seen, so I'm thrilled that she's cast. That's, mm-hmm. you know, and again, generally trust it because it's from Deadline. No solid confirmation from Lucasfilm or the actor yet. Not even any sneaky tweets that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
Winking at this being true. So I really hope it's true because I think she's just great in Game of Thrones. Yeah, I think I know that there is the fan reaction conversation was immediately is she Satine or not, which I think is kind of a complex conversation. I think my main reaction to that is I'd love for Satine to appear, but you know, I think that would be limited to a flashback. Is my guess. I don't personally want Satine to come back to life, but yeah. I kind of feel like I would like an actor of Indira Varma's caliber to have a larger role than what I think Satine might be. I, of course, given all our conversations about expectations, could be wrong, and we'll happily throw all of these opinions out the window. So I think that's the thing for me, is I'm not too caught up in this Satine conversation. Yeah. Like, again, I think it's a little delicate and complex for lots of different reasons. But I kind of just hope that she's, I don't know, I think this is what I'm responding to, Ken, is I totally understand the fan desire when a big name is cast to go, ooh, which known character could they be playing? And sometimes there's something that just leads you to that, right? But I feel like for a great actor like her, like, there are so many different characters who might be needed in this story. You know, is she a rebel working closely with Bail Organa? You know, is she some smuggler who gets Kenobi off of Tatooine? Is she a moisture farmer that he hangs out with at the bar? Is she a bounty hunter looking for Kenobi? Is, you know, she an Imperial who helps tell the Vader side of the story? You know, is she a frustrated senator, you know, within the Imperial machinery? There's so many different figures that she could be, you know, that I that stuff is almost more fun for me to speculate about than is she going to play a character I already know?
Yeah, yeah, I'm right there with you. And look, it's fun. You definitely go down that path, and going back to some of our deeper conversations to start the show, or even just our T-shirt, speculate responsibly, comes from a, hey, this is part of the fun and the passion of being a fan, but, you know, watch where it goes, all that kind of stuff. But look, I love her as a performer. My love of Game of Thrones shines through in almost every conversation I have. I apologize for that, folks. I love Ilaria Sand, and even the show, some of the producers and writers and Brian Cogman and everyone kind of admitted, like, Dorne was a hard story to pull off. We almost sometimes wish we didn't, because we just that's a whole nother book. It literally is a whole book. Four, Feast for Crows is like, cool, put Westeros aside and we're going to go down to Dorne, which is part of Westeros, of course, and give you an entire new world. And she had so little time after season four, but what she brought to those moments was spectacular. And I got to tell you that I don't like pigeonholing performers. But some of the, any kind of Kenobi getting not necessarily love interest or someone to be a potential love interest. I don't want to just put her in that role, because also part of what I loved about Ilaria Sand was her kind of finding herself and taking charge in Dorne, whether right or wrong, whether it led to good or bad things. There was some great stuff in there that she brought forth of just trying to be a power, a woman of power in that brutal world. And I think there was some complexity she brought to that. So I'd love to see that, a Rebel Alliance character, all those kind of stuff. I can't lie, Joseph, the idea of the part of the story being the last temptation of Kenobi, so to speak, is intriguing too. Whether or not she'd be that performer, I think she'd be compelling in it. Not just because of, you know, Ilaria Sand's also a, you know, sexy character, and Oberyn Martell's a sexy character. Is that kind of sensational stuff. I think she could be a simple moisture farmer. Kenobi's kind of like, man, and that could be interesting to the story if they go that way too. Also, you know, Rebecca Jackson Mendoza was Breha Organa in Revenge of the Sith. She's actually about the same age as Indira Varma. I don't know why, you know, but if there's any time that's going to be spent on Alderaan, Breha Organa is an interesting character too. So I don't want to fan cast someone in place of another working performer like Rebecca Jackson Mendoza. But that's an option for me too, if you want to go to that kind of route. But that leads me to also what you were kind of saying of like some sort of leader, some sort of power in the galaxy, or someone trying for power, could be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think what you're saying, I hope Breha, that'd be great if we got some quality on screen Breha time. But I really love what you're saying about just, you know, who does the narrative need? Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we've had great fun speculating about could Kenobi commune with Qui-Gon? Could Kenobi remember that Padme's last words were hope for Anakin? Could he have flashbacks to the Clone Wars and we'd see Hayden Christensen as Anakin? Could a Ahsoka pop up also in a flashback or all that? You know, that there's still something possibly needed where he has somebody who doesn't know his history, who he has to talk with.
Yeah.
And redefine himself in somebody else's eyes, you know, whether that is a moisture farmer or a smuggler getting him off a planet, or a rebel leader who, you know, doesn't know anything about him, never met him, you know, whatever it is. I think there is a lot of potential for who is this character who sees him from the outside right now?
Yeah, that's a great challenge to the character. You know, just this old space wizard hiding in a desert. What does that look like? And how what he's able to learn about himself or see about himself through someone else's. That's a good way to look at it. And that could be so many characters, but potentially someone so powerful.
Yeah. But overall, just really hope this is true. I think she's great.
Yeah. Totally. Totally. Big fan myself. So next story here, not a lot. One of those what I call wonderfully slow news days, which means probably Ryan Johnson's trilogy will get confirmed and announced moments after this episode drops. Rise of Skywalker led the Saturn Award nominations this something over the weekend. Saturn awards covering a period going back to summer 2019 into early 2021, which is why it's being announced now. 12 total nominations. I'll start running through that list here. But also additionally, Mando got nominated for Best Television Presentation, Giancarlo Esposito for Best Guest Star Performance, and Clone Wars for Best Animated Series. So, Joseph, what jumps out for you? These nominations, no doubt, Rise of Skywalker, a film that elicits opinions, as do most Star Wars things these days. But I want to get your feelings on all the nominations, and especially things like editing and costuming and all the effects noms.
Yeah, no, I'm extremely happy to see a lot of nominations. Obviously, there are extremely strong opinions about Rise of Skywalker, but no surprise, while we have our critiques in general, we're big fans of the film. So, yeah, always happy to see the costuming, the makeup, the visual effects. You know, you watch those behind the scenes things. You know, there's a good documentary on the Rise of Skywalker home releases, and to just see the sheer volume of effort and thought and artistry and passion. You know, you see every once in a while, you know, on Twitter, sometimes, you know, because Star Wars is for everyone, and, you know, there are people who've grown up with it and Star Wars means a lot to them, but they don't have podcasts or listen to a bunch of podcasts. And yeah, sometimes I'll see a friend like that who, like, or just like, you know, doesn't like the sequels, which is absolutely fine, but just kind of get in that headspace of, you know, like, soulless corporate products, and like, there is nothing but soul coming off of the costume and the makeup, you know, and all of those hardworking people who, I think that's true of everybody involved, but actors, writers, directors. But really, sometimes when I see tweets like that, I was like, watch this documentary and tell me this person working their ass off to make the a beautiful, weird Star Wars creature that gives them joy and emotion, that it's a soulless endeavor.
Yeah, and that's folks like Michael Kaplan with the Best Costuming, you know, Amanda Knight, Neil Scanlon for film makeup, all the visual effects, including Neil Scanlon, Patrick Tubak, Dominic Tuohy, and Roger Guyet. I mean, that's just a, yeah, you're so, they're you know, putting their life's work into this stuff. I particularly enjoy Michael Kaplan, particularly in The Last Jedi talk, the director of The Jedi, because he's so, that moment you and I talked about of him just kind of fighting Ryan, or just saying, well, we've never done that before. And Ryan saying, well, we're doing it now. And then he succeeds, and the joy to see him succeed, and the praise and the Canto Bite stuff, and just everyone happy and applauding in the day. I love that. And I just think he's done such a good job in all the movies and all these worlds and Yaki Yaki and everything. It's so just wonderfully Star Wars. And a lot of it comes from folks like him.
Yeah, absolutely. Thoroughly agreed. I think I'm also just really pumped about the acting.
Yeah,
I think that would be great. I think it's Daisy Ridley for Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor, Adam Driver, and Ian McDiarmid. Hey, yeah, I mean, give every award you can to Ian McDiarmid, if nothing else, so we can just hear the acceptance speech. But I just, you know, I think I know this is a Saturn Awards, which is for genre stuff, so the odds are better and all that. But I just think genre films, I think one of my biggest frustrations with the way that they are still perceived in awards circles is that some technical things can win, but the acting isn't always rewarded. And, you know, I'm sorry, Mark Hamill deserves 800 Oscars for The Last Jedi, in my opinion. Yeah. Daisy Ridley in Rise of Skywalker, I think her performance is one of the reasons that I love the movie so, so much. I think it's just so complex and nuanced, and, you know, that film is about, you know, don't be afraid of who you are, and it's about Rey this finally, you know, looking inside herself and not looking for other people to define her, but deciding for herself who she is, you know, and she plays all those great emotions of natural leaning towards kindness and helping, and just the anger and the frustration, the lashing out of the power, and then the fear of the power, and then the absolute confidence when she's got her feet beneath her and has decided she gets to decide who she is. All of these complex internal ideas that are the absolute heart of the movie and the end of the Skywalker saga, she is carrying them all off, and it's just, I think it's worthy of recognition.
Overall, you're so right. I mean, it's just been a long-held thing of just the genre stuff doesn't get a lot of the awards respect. We were talking with Scott Mance over on Good People Association this week, and he's a big Star Trek guy, but he's a big fan of Empire Strikes Back. Just to, you know, who isn't? But he really is a film guy. He really is. And we were talking. He's like, you know, Mark Hamill never got his due for making all that work off a puppet, because you can focus on how wonderful Frank Oz is and how that's a big risk. I've talked about it here. You've talked about it here. Of it's a big risk to base the entire second movie, the most popular movie in the world, on a puppet. But Mark Hamill has said, you know, for weeks, I was the only human on the call sheet. And I think Empire, you know, Jedi, Return of the Jedi, good. Everyone's good. Different feel of the movie, different intentions, different goals, I think, of the movie. But Empire is so good. Last Jedi is so good. And I think this is Daisy's best performance. I think she grew as a performer. This is Force Awakens being one of her first big roles. I think there's some great moments in Last Jedi with her and Adam Driver. Adam Driver, obviously, he brings a lot. But I just think you're right. By Rise of Skywalker, particularly stuff on Exegol, I think I always say an actor tells a story with their face, their eyes, and there's so much going on. So yeah, I'm glad. Just, you know, it's not a Golden Globe or an Oscar. It's a Saturn Award, but it's important, and I think it matters to us as Star Wars fans.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, and yeah, so totally agree about Empire that Mark Hamill made the Muppet work.
Made the Muppet work, indeed. Final story of the day. All right. Yeah, here we go. That sounded negative. I apologize. I was going to really want to reverse it. Thrawn, Greater Good Expert, was released. The Greater Good is coming out April 27th. Greater Good. And this is a part of the Thrawn Ascendancy series. Timothy Zahn gets to write all about Thrawn and everyone out there in the Chiss Ascendancy. I'll admit, Joseph, I read it. I looked through it. And there you go. What do you think?
I think that we both had such a fun and complicated journey with the Thrawn and the Zahn of it all. We always say that, you know, well, I'll speak for myself, and I think you and I usually agree. Zahn and the Thrawn stories always lean a little bit more to the science fiction part of the wonderful stew that is Star Wars than the space fantasy. I've been enjoying really just saying that's what it is, and now I accept it for that instead of grumbling about it, and I enjoy these Thrawn books more. But then it's also fun to just kind of, I think you and I try to have a sense of humor about it, is there are absolutely things in this excerpt that intrigue me, of like, ooh, where's the big picture story going to go next? But also just having a sense of humor of like, yep, there's something appealing about the Thrawn books because they are what they are. Yeah. And, you know, it is like, do you want to spend some time with space Sherlock Holmes at different stages of his life? Great. Here you go.
Yeah.
Here he is. There was a sentence in particular. I think this is we're in Arlani's head because we don't go into Thrawn's head in these books. Yeah. And Arlani is, you know, figuring out some space tactics. And there's the sentence, there were tables and balance charts to calculate that sort of thing.
I thought you and I were going to highlight the same line, because I was going to say, when Thrawn responds to Arlani, certainly, Captain Lakenda, if you'll turn 30 degrees to starboard, I believe you draw your attackers into a crossfire, which is what I think of when I think of Thrawn.
Yeah, I mean, if you like space Sherlock Holmes drawing people into crossfire by changing degrees, then, you know, that is what a lot of the charm of these books.
Yeah, no, look, despite you and I having reputations of being too positive sometimes with Star Wars, you know, over there at Force Center, they just love everything. This isn't my favorite stuff. But I'll tell you what, I do love what Zahn did with Thrawn in the 90s and kept the flame alive. I've talked about that a lot. And I do love Thrawn. I do love him in Rebels, by the way. I love that he showed up. I think it works. I think it really works. And what I love about the Thrawn stuff, because I know there's a lot of fans of these the previous new canon Thrawn books, and they're deep and they're philosophical and they ask interesting questions. And because Thrawn is in his own little world, literally, in these books now, we're going to really be able to find out a little bit more about what makes him tick. He's kind of I see him sometimes as a good guy, but then, you know, he works with the Palpatine, and there's a lot of stuff there that I think is worth exploring. And I'm curious to see Thrawn completely on his own in storytelling, what that will do. you know, unless Anakin shows up or something.
Yeah, I think for me, for like my hopes for the second book, I really liked the way the first book kind of centered in this trilogy, centered the question of who is Thrawn. Does Thrawn himself even fully understand who he is when he's not fully formed and he's kind of wrestling with, you know, why am I good at tactics but not great at understanding individuals and, you know, who I'm chafing against the way that just Ascendancy does things. Why is that? Can I make some peace with that? And and I liked also kind of what it did a little bit with Thrawn and Arlani's relationship of, you know, is this, you know, in some ways it's his most intimate friendship, but does he even do full on intimacy? So I'm excited to dig into the Thrawn and Arlani relationship. And when I saw that was the excerpt, I was excited about that because that's one of the things that I think is most interesting about Thrawn's story right now.
I do agree with that. And well, we will definitely take a look. We love this wide variety of Star Wars stories out there. And The Greater Good arrives April 27th. Our discussion will probably be a little bit after that, but look for it. And we look forward to diving on in. All right. That's a look at Star Wars news right now. So for the 9-picture Rian Johnson movie franchise under Star Wars that was announced today or whatever, we'll see. We'll see. We'll get to the news next week if it breaks. Before we take a quick break, we're going to do our Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And Joseph, once again, it's a little homework to get you prepared.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I hope the news breaks about the Rian Johnson trilogy. And I think it'd be great if someone named Rian Jackson was suddenly making a trilogy as well. Yeah. And we'll realize that we're in the Berenstain Bears universe with a different. Anyway, the thing we're recommending this week is Into the Dark by Claudia Gray. It's another High Republic book. We are going to be talking about it this coming Thursday this week. Real excited to dig in. So if you haven't had a chance to absorb the book yet and you like to listen on audio, we suggest checking out Into the Dark by Claudia Gray.
Check it out and download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, we'll take a quick break, reset, and come back with your questions here on ForceCenter.
Would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Four Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Four Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. Welcome back to Force Center. We're still on the command deck of our ship News and Cues. And Joseph, it's time to bring in the Q Warriors.
That's right. We're going to adjust our Q cannons 30 degrees, and we're going to try to share some thoughts here. We always take two questions from Twitter and two questions from our great patrons on Patreon. We'll go to Twitter first. Derek Norris asks, or says and asks, Snoke, is he sentient? Just a cast of a body that Sidious puppets through? Did Palpatine create him? Why so many clones? Either he's super hubristic in his throne room death scene, or Sidious is toying with Ren to kill him so he falls further down the dark path. So Derek's got a great summary of what we don't know yet, which is, what's the deal with Snoke? Which would be a great Saturday Night Live sketch of a game show set inside the Star Wars galaxy. But I think is one of my favorite questions that currently we have been given, as David Lynch would call it, room to dream. We don't know the concrete answers. We can look at little bits of evidence we have and use our intuition or just have fun speculating. So for you, where do you go with the little bits of information we have, including whether or not you consider, you know, in The Mandalorian, are they working on Snoke's body? Do you think that's what's happening? That's a big piece of this puzzle of whether you agree that, yeah, I think they're developing Snoke, or like, yeah, maybe. What is important to you, Ken? What kind of picture do you want to emerge of who Snoke is?
Ooh, that's a dangerous question. What's important to me? Because what it is, I'm still going on the idea that Snoke is somewhat his own person. So a clone, a body, a series of bodies, something, you know, did they try to, let's take a soul and put it in another body, and then we can try that on our old buddy Sheev. Is it something related to that? Is it someone cloned and the body's, you know, just simply in the old science fiction terms, or even the Attack the Clone terms of just, it's a clone from someone, from Steve Snoke, a guy they picked up along the way. I don't know, but I kind of want it to be him to be his own person as much as possible for me. But I love the idea that regardless, or maybe not, the reason I want that, Joseph, might be because I just like the idea that Snoke is someone or something that thought he was getting from something from Sidious, a la Dooku, and perhaps, you know, perhaps he's born in the dark side, whatever it is. But I just like the idea that he thought he was getting something and then he didn't, and that he was a tool to work with Kylo or seduce Kylo and seduce Ben. But he thought maybe he and good old Palpatine would rule the galaxy as friend and friend.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that idea of like what is the relationship that Snoke and Palpatine could have had. I think for me, what I really like about the idea of Snoke is that the possibility that he is a puppet who doesn't know he's a puppet. I'm more intrigued by that than, every word that we heard Snoke say in Force Awakens and Last Jedi is, you know, literally Palpatine, and he's like a dummy. It's like great, amazing force ventriloquism across the vast chasm of space. I like the idea. You know, I'm kind of leaning towards, I feel like that's what they're going toward in Mandalorian, that they're using Grogu's midichlorians to try to create a clone that does have an attachment to the Force, that they're trying to clone a body that actually can have this unnatural connection to the dark side. I think I like the story that Palpatine needs someone who is not him. I think he learned his lesson with, hey, you know, when I corrupted Anakin, I did it over a long period of time by pretending to be this sympathetic figure before I let the dime drop. And then I just got cocky and tried to, you know, do the same thing, but real, real, real quick with Luke. And that one didn't work out. I need a figure, a sympathetic figure. And this is very much the way Snoke is written in that great Charles Soule comic book, Rise of Kylo Ren. Is a sympathetic figure who is just presenting Kylo Ren with a different point of view. And look, I've been injured and hunted by Luke Skywalker, so I guess he doesn't believe all about peace. And I guess he's afraid of you, Ben. And I guess he's holding you back from discovering your true self. That's too bad. And this figure who can do all that in person with authenticity is so valuable to Palpatine's corruption of Ben. So I like the idea that Snoke was, he's a clone. He's been physically manipulated to be able to manipulate the Force himself. And maybe Snoke sometimes hears whispering from Palpatine, but he just thinks that's the dark side. And Snoke thinks he is the master. Because I think in Last Jedi, that is absolutely Snoke's hubris that gets him killed by Kylo Ren. And I think, to me, it makes perfect sense that Snoke is this needed sympathetic figure to turn Ben and train him in the dark side. And then from Palpatine's perspective, even better if Kylo Ren can entirely prove himself by slaughtering Snoke. He doesn't really lose anything, and it's a good test for Kylo. And I think that's, in my current headcanon, that's what happens in The Last Jedi.
Yeah, and I know in Rise of Skywalker we got Palpatine saying I've been every voice inside your head, and that could be very, very literal, or it could be part of the manipulation of Snoke as well. And I like the why that you've provided there of just why do you need Snoke to be someone of his own person. I'm glad you mentioned that comic book. It's a really interesting take on Snoke, right? It was plus that weird hair or hat he's got. I don't know what's going on. And that space station that they're on factors into upcoming conversations in the High Republic. And there's just some, there's something powerful. Now, again, because I think I'm going to say that it contradicts itself, but we always say everything a character says isn't facts. But the idea of Palpatine, I don't think he was well enough all these years or whole enough, you know, maybe his soul, his mind and his words, but to reach across the galaxy and control Snoke's every thoughts and every move. I don't know if I buy into that from Palpatine. That might be a lie he's trying to sell Kylo too in that moment, and making him doubt everything about the connection he had with good old Snoke. So there's some stuff going on there, but also to the point of what you're saying of just Snoke himself not fully realizing, because it just is powerful in that way to me.
Yeah, yeah, and that goes to the whole, you know, the idea of somebody like Dooku, like you're saying, of like if Snoke is absolutely a clone, absolutely created by Palpatine. Sometimes Palpatine himself whispers to Ben in the voice of Snoke once they've made that bond, or maybe that's Snoke whispering to him at times, but all of it still all leads back to Palpatine, regardless of whenever we get the sort of specifics, it all leads back to Palpatine regardless.
Yeah. And again, at the end of the day, we just don't know the full story yet. And I think one day we will, not in the immediate future.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what will be announced later today.
Yes.
The Snoke story coming soon. All right. We'll move on to our next question. Thank you, Derek. That's a really fun one to examine and to think about of what's the deal with Snoke. Mm-hmm. For now, we're going to move on to a new question from Connor Targaryen. What do you think Grogu's first words will be? Now, Ken, I think we discussed this before the second season of The Mandalorian, expecting that we were going to hear an amazing moment of that first sentence. Yeah. It's a much different question now and much more complicated of even if we might have strong opinions about what Grogu's first word might be, they might be at Luke's training.
Yeah.
During Luke's training. And we don't get to hear them, or they're not to Din, or maybe Grogu will take a vow of silence until Din comes back into his life. What are you feeling now that we know this other part of Grogu's story that he did part with Din and went off with Jedi Master Luke Skywalker?
Yeah, I can't even remember specifically what we've predicted. I hope then, just as I hope now, that his first words are actually Mando, but we'll see. I don't know. And then the question of, does he speak like Yoda? That's a big one. We've talked about that too. So I think it might be something around either a powerful proclamation, he's returning to help, or returning with a purpose. So might it be returned, I have, or I have returned. I also love a message or something being sent and Din having it, and whether or not we see the direct communication, whether it's a holo recording or something, along the lines of miss you, Dad. I miss you, Dad. Miss you, I do. I could take something of that.
Nice. Yeah. I kind of think that we might not see on screen his first words. I still think eat might be one. Din, or, you know, Dada, even if he's not with him, he might say his name. No, because he does seem to still have, you know, some anger and control issues. Mine. that's all a possibility. There's something I really liked. I went to the same place as you of like, for what we, the audience, might hear.
Yeah.
You know, a close to fully formed sentence, you know, if the next time Din sees him, you know, if the Mandalorian continues and he, Grogu, gets trained up a little bit and Mando goes to visit him and he's there in a little Jedi robe and says, you know, thank you, I do, you know, for your care, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be sweet.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? I think it would be miss you or thank you, right? It would have to be something like that.
Yeah. Again, I'm trying to think, you know, it's like, it's hard to predict. There's so many questions about what happens with him and Luke, obviously, which makes it so wonderful and tantalizing, and why we can't wait to hear more. But so I hope it's that. I hope it's sweet.
Yeah. Sweet. Yeah. Yeah. I really hope it is very, very kind and very, a good connection between Din and Grogu, and not something too. Maybe he'll be a snarky teen by the time.
Again. Is it that? Yeah, no.
Yeah, and he'll just give Mando some crap for something. I'm like, hey, remember when I almost was devoured by that sea creature? Thanks, Dad.
Thanks, Dad.
We hope for miss you or thank you. Great question, Connor. We're going to move on to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. This one comes from Alden Diaz. This one's got a little bit of ideas behind it before we get to the big question, which we absolutely encourage. So here we go. Alden says, hey, guys, let's talk about Force visuals. Light of the Jedi beautifully describes how many of the Jedi characters experience the depth of the Force in ways that fit their personalities, interests, backgrounds, etc. Avar Chris experiences a song, Baryaga sees himself as part of a great tree, and so on and so forth. So the question is twofold. How do you feel some previously established characters would visually experience the Force, people we know and love from the Skywalker era? Maybe Luke sees the Lars homestead, hence the twin sons, when he dies. And the second part, how would you yourselves or those close to you experience it? Does Joseph see a sold-out comedy show? Does Ken see a sprawling epic fantasy map? Does Jennifer see a massive crafting project with colors and materials? What about your partners and family? I find it fun to think about for myself and those around me. It's really added a new flavor to Star Wars. Thanks. Thank you, Alden. Yeah, I think that was one of my favorite parts of The Light of the Jedi is for us to truly experience the different ways the Jedi see the Force, to have it be this actual, literal, visceral thing, that it's not just a feeling, it's not just energy, that they visualize it, was one of my favorite parts. So let's dive in. I think when we did our Light of the Jedi review, we talked a little bit about how we might see it, but let's start with the first part of Alden's question. How do you think other characters that we already know from the Skywalker era might see it?
And Alden kind of touched on it with Luke. Going to Luke, I don't know what you think, Joseph, but like the image of burning suns is so powerful. Him growing up on Tatooine, but I just see him connecting to the warmth of it all, and that's part of you know, beyond just the visual, but the actual feeling, almost like he is standing in the sun and kind of feeling the light side around him, and all the hopes and possibilities and all of the purposes that he can find within that. I kind of like that kind of visual. It works for me both at the beginning of the story and at the end of the story.
Yeah, no, I love what you're saying about feeling the not oppressive heat, but just the constant warmth, the comfortable warmth. That's a great way to just feel like is that what the light side feels like, you know, is just feeling warm. I think for me, there's something, there's definitely the suns themselves, as you and Alden say, which I think is so spot on. But I wonder if there's something about connecting it to this fundamental truth of Luke that connects all the way through from A New Hope to The Last Jedi, of his mind and his soul and his vision is always a little bit on the horizon. And I wonder if that's a little bit of how he sees the Force. It's not always about looking to what's next, but he spent his childhood looking up at the stars and dreaming. And, you know, does he see the Force as, you know, celestial objects, you know, working in concert or colliding and, you know, moving together and pulling apart and being affected by the gravity of one another? There's something to me that is embraces that there's this part of Luke who's always staring at the horizon, that's a part of the way that he would see the Force.
Yeah. I like that a lot. I think he ought to be okay with that. Wouldn't have to bonk him on the head for that one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Yoda, I think, just sees Dagobah. I think this is it. Right?
Yeah. Mud, rain.
Mud rain, yeah. Whatever his home planet, Yothan, is like.
Yeah.
Not confirmed. Just, you know, a thing we're throwing out there. Sorry. Do you have thoughts on other Jedi?
Well, clearly, Kenobi just sees a wall of top shelf liquor. He just a world of possibilities to pour into his drink. I'll say this. Leia, without a doubt, inspired greatly from The Last Jedi. I just wonder if she kind of sees it all, a galaxy of stars. And her place in all of it, her place in the universe, and many, many areas of possibilities to help and to plug in and to float to and to move to and to be one with. Just kind of see her literally floating in the stars like she was.
Oh, and wow.
Do it out there like that.
Yeah, I also like that because it's just like a cosmic version of, you know, the strategy boards that which she is so often literally physically looking at, you know? And those strategy boards to me are cool because they take something that is extremely cosmic and intuitive and make it a physical reality that has to be dealt with. And I love that perspective on Leia that is brought up in the Rise of Skywalker novelization of like, she is absolutely intuitive. She can absolutely feel all these things and connect to all these things across the stars, but she's also been somebody who's always had to deal with it can't be philosophy for me. It has to be translated into physically what is needed. Yeah. How do I respond? You know, so there's something about that that's really cool to me. For me, I think Obi-Wan, I really like the idea that he feels it almost as the Force is like an extremely complicated conversation at a dinner table or around the bar, you know, like that he would almost perceive it as, you know, emotions and conversations and, you know, all those different points of view, right? That I love that that's been built up in his character, that he truly does process things that way, that it's almost like he can feel that, you know, this person on this end of the table is their mind is never going to change, and he can feel the doubt in this other person, and he can feel the bonhomie and the connection between these two people who are raised in a glass. That there's something interesting to me about that.
Love that. See, it's not a joke. It's Obi-Wan and drinking. It's a good thing.
Exactly. Last one for me that I thought of is Ben Solo.
Okay.
I love how much water imagery is so important to the sequel trilogy, and I think the dyad of Rey and Ben. I think Ben just sees it at the Force is just monstrous waves, just huge crushing waves that he's either going to be crushed by or he is going to direct to crush other people. I think it's, you know, there's so much in his story that is about how he deals with the fact that he has this enormous power. And, you know, do people love him for it? Do people fear him for it? Do they need him to use it a specific way? I feel like he would see the Force as just this massively powerful thing that is his to direct.
That's great, because I went with Rey and I put down the elements. Pouring rain, wind, earth, wind, and fire. Great band, but also a great way to view the Force. Pouring rain, wind, the cold, the sun. I am fascinated by every little beat where Rey, even up through Rise of Skywalker, is still sometimes that little girl on Jakku left alone, or the scavenger scum as the galaxy viewed her on this faraway planet, Rey from nowhere. And that, you know, every time she puts her hands at and feels the rain or looks at all the green in the world and sees the joy and the culture of the Aki Aki festival, I just kind of see her connecting to the Force that way too, of becoming part of the story and everything that it is. And so she can just kind of see herself looking out at just all the elements that are there for her to touch.
Oh yeah. I love that. I think that's absolutely great. So let's move on then to how we see it ourselves. I know we talked about a little bit on our Light of the Jedi review with Alex from Star Wars Explained. Yeah. But I'm curious if you've been having new thoughts about the way you would see it, or the way other people, as Alden asked, other people in your life, how they would see it. Where do you go with that?
I mean, Grace would just see it as a bunch of TikTok videos of animals just connecting to the pure joy of all the animals in the world.
What is the dark side version of animals on TikTok?
Just rage. A lot of red hair and red sabers and rage. For me, what I went with now, it's funny. Yeah, we did talk about it. And Alden's the map. I love my maps, but I love, the hours I just stare at the Red Dead Redemption 2 map going, do I want to go back to Strawberry today or Valentin? I don't know. That would work. But for me, for, you know, a little bit of what I am, good and bad, sometimes a stoic but a steady rock. I almost will see us a lighthouse in the storm on some sort of... coast there, being there, shining out. I'm here if you need me. I'll guide you through, but also I can't be moved, so maybe come help me.
Well, I think that is a great idea. Is it a weakness or a strength that you are strong? Mm-hmm. You are rooted in place, and your purpose is to help people. So that all sounds like good stuff. But then also, are you, you know, you're wrestling with, should I be rooted in this one place?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a guiding light, but should I also be more? So, yeah, that's how I could kind of see it there. And it's a lot of what I love about the High Republic so far is analyzing, looking, and even questioning some of the ways you see or use the Force or been told about it. And I love some of those type of things. So, yeah, that's my answer right now.
Yeah, such a great picture. I also think for the High Republic has been doing such a good job of asking itself this question of, well, who are the Jedi at the height of their power? Well, then that means there is a mix of certainty and a mix of questioning, because that's, you know, the ideal. And you know, the prequel era stories are often a little bit too much rigidity. So I loved that idea of questioning it and picturing it. I think for myself, my wife would absolutely see it as dance. My wife is a dancer. There is something very force-like when she talks about movement and just kind of needing it on an intuitive level of needing to let this energy and this motion, the power of the galaxy be translated into modern dance and ballet and tap dancing. She's a great dancer, and I hope to see her not just picturing it as a force, but actually dancing again soon. When we did the review, I talked about gesture drawing, which is the kind of drawing I did in art school, where it isn't trying to actually do like lifelike representations or even abstract artistic renderings. It's just a model changes poses a bunch and you just try to capture the actual physical movement of the body. You know, is all the energy planted down in the feet? Is the energy arcing up from the back and coming out the left hand? Is all the energy actually about, you know, coming up through the neck and into the head? You know, and it's a very fast, intuitive kind of drawing, but it is still about like, let's strip away all of everything else and kind of see what the real intent in the moment is of the other humans around you.
Yeah.
So I still like that. But I like what Alden brings up about a sold out comedy show, which is great. Because you know, in comedy shows, there is light and there is darkness. But there's also that's to me, I've talked a lot on 4Center about the way that was probably my first big understanding of the depth of Star Wars is connecting it to my own artistic pursuits of drawing and drumming and acting and writing and all that. But comedy in particular, you know, it was real powerful to think about and realize how important that sort of intuitive force-like flow is to me, of that I always think of performing, particularly comedy, all performing, but really comedy is a dance with the audience, right? There's so much that you can't express. You just need to feel. You get the concrete information when the audience laughs, but even within that, you're analyzing what kind of laugh, exactly why did they laugh? If I do a little tag like this, will that bring more laughter? What is the exact right moment? You're riding these waves of energy and it's a conversation, right? I know there are some comedians that I have talked to, and I think they see things this way because these are the words they've used to describe it to me. So I could be wrong, but like there can be that perception if you're performing, you're doing something to the audience. You are making them laugh and it's a one-way street. And for me, it's always been a back and forth. Like, of course, it is my responsibility to generate the laugh, but I can generate the best laughs if I'm listening to the audience and feeling their mood, and even being literally aware of, is this a show where food is being served? Did they just eat? Is it really cold in the building? You know, it just like really, really being aware and feeling the audience too. So I think what Alden's question made me see is I think I have been thinking of comedy as the force for a long time.
It's beautiful and well said. You also described what it's like to work a pro wrestling match too, of listen to the audience telling you what they want, but also telling your story. No, beautiful, wonderful. And because I'm listening to you, I'm like, you're so right. Too bad I'm often at war with the audience. I must refocus.
I think that is that's the dark side, right? That's when it becomes, comedy can become adversarial. And I think sometimes people choose to approach it that way. I think sometimes through no fault of your own, I've had some gigs where just like, wow, this is, you know, a different community than I normally perform for. And we are on different wavelengths. And can I get to your wavelength? And it's easy to very quickly become the like, all right, let's fight, audience. And I know some comedians, that is their shtick. And if it's their shtick, then they know exactly what they're doing. And you know, it is the light side disguises the dark. And I think sometimes it is just the dark side of like, I am here to feel powerful by making you laugh. And I'm going to do that.
Yeah. For me, you know what it'd be? For me, it's never been that. It is the fear. It has become so a war with the audience when I let the fear of it all dominate me, which especially in early years of stand-up comedy, not to get philosophical in comedy, I was so fearful of being who I was or trying to connect and tell my story on stage that I turned the audience into the enemy. So there you go. Spiritual force stuff from comedy.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you can project through the comedy force, through the funny, the cosmic force that is the funny, that, hey, I trust that you're going to laugh, so I'm going to come across as confident, and you're going to trust me that I'm going to make you laugh, then we'll all have fun.
Yeah.
And if not, here comes the dark side. Anyway, great question, Alden. Thank you for letting us deep dive into our lighthouse and stand-up comedy experience.
Yes.
From TikTok to dance, all sorts of great thoughts. We're going to move on to our final question from Joshua Thorne. What do you think was R2-D2's reaction to receiving a transmission from Master Luke, but it turned out to be Rey in his old ship? Did R2 think Luke could actually still be alive for a split second? Where do you go with this, Ken?
This is great. This is a great question, Joshua. It's also kind of a dark thought. And it's also stuff I love. This is when I sometimes have to remind myself, especially over the last 3-4 years in Star Wars fandom, where I got to, hey, Ken, it's okay to have a little fun with Star Wars too. Poke a little fun, but also just out of a loving point of view. This little point in the movie could very easily be a Robot Chicken style sketch, right? Of just R2 going, hey, man, is it Luke? No. And I could see him being a little confused or a little hurt, a little poor. And it makes me go, poor R2. But I'll tell you what, beyond all that, I think R2 knew. I think he knew it was Rey. I think he understood. I'm not saying R2 was force sensitive, but he just knew Luke so well, knew what was going on, and just kind of knew that this was the next chapter. R2 did a better job at accepting the next generation than many other people I know, even. And I just think that might have been part of it. Is he bummed? Does he want to be? Is he excited? Does he think? Yeah, maybe he does. But I think in his heart, in his droid heart, whatever your version of that is to you, that he knows, he knew it would have been Rey, and it should be Rey.
Yeah. I think this is a great question. There's always this fun question of how much does R2-D2 know in terms of just cold, hard facts, which it would appear a lot. And then how much does he understand the relationships between organics? You know, does he know that he could have or maybe should have piped up to Luke and gone, mm-hmm. Hey, you know, I've been here before, this Dagobah place.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, I totally know this, this jerk Luke, this jerk Yoda, jerk from his perspective since they just had the fight. Yeah. Those questions are always fun. But I think I go to the way R2 made the choice to communicate with Luke on Octo, which suggested a level of understanding of emotion that he chose to play the old message for Luke, knowing that it's something that would motivate Luke toward action. And I think R2 knows that X-Wing is there, right? I mean, I think what book is it? I think it's I can't remember which book it's in. It's either Leia or Padme, and I apologize, I can't remember, where like R2 is left alone, so he started scanning the hell out of everything around him, which he does whenever he doesn't have anything better to do. And I just love that picture of R2 where he's always like, all right, what's going on? I'm going to know the most, so I'm prepared. So there's, to my mind, he knows that ship is there. And that ship, I think R2 sees that ship the way I do, is it is a symbol of Luke's choice to disengage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think whatever else R2 understands, when he sees that ship flying again, sees that code that he probably, you know, that transmission he probably installed on it.
Yeah.
When he sees it in flight, he knows the spirit of it is that Luke has encouraged not hiding, but getting involved and in taking action and helping people.
Mm. Yeah. That little R2, that little droid, the droid who knew too much and said so little.
Yeah. Oh. I think maybe that is some of the charm ultimately between 3PO and R2, that 3PO is the one who is allegedly, you know, an expert in human cyborg relationships. And R2 is a little bit better at understanding the organics, maybe.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. That's so great question, Joshua. Great question, Alden, Connor, and Derek. Sorry, I almost said a naughty word. My sheet slipped. Excellent. I'm ready to get back live on stage, Ken. Talk about all that sheet slipping. But those are our questions. Thank you, everyone. Everyone being Josh Alden, Connor, and Derek. I did it.
It's okay. Ryan Jackson really enjoys your comedy. He's the director of Knives Inn. All right. This has been a fun episode. Fun stuff, deep stuff. It's what we do here on Four Center, episode 304 in the books. You can find us on Twitter at Four Center Pod. We are on Instagram, YouTube as well. Facebook page is Four Center Podcast. We're available on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and now Amazon Music. And Spotify as well. Some stuff going on over there. Spotify, which now owns Anchor. I'll look for some cool things coming your way. tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter is where you can buy merch. And Patreon is available at patreon.com/ForceCenter if you want to support us directly there. It is once again time for me to focus on the St. Baldrick's organization. Mentioned them recently, but in March, St. Baldrick's at stbaldricks.org. They help fight childhood cancers. They got a big event, a shave event coming. Our friend over at the Feeding the Monster podcast, Jeff Saunders, is involved with that. He's also in the medical field, a nurse who works with children with childhood cancer. So I am supporting them right now. And you can get more information by going to stbaldricks.org. You can also follow me and link to them from my website at kennapsock.com or follow me at kennapsockjoseph.
Yeah, great ideas, including following you and supporting that charity, supporting that organization, that movement. For myself, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all my other comedy adventures. I think my wife and I on our podcast, Obsessed, are going to be talking WandaVision, which I'm really excited to because I really, really liked some of the big ideas and some of the fun stuff in that show as well. So you can always find a link to Obsessed Podcast on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. And final thing for me, I continue to suggest the service ResistBot. You can get it on your phone. You can text, you can tweet, you can go to their website. Just put ResistBot in all the search in places. It's just a great, fast way to let your reps know what you care about, which I think is really important right now.
Absolutely is. A lot of things out there to get plugged into. Thank you all for letting us tell you where we're plugged in, and also for sharing all of our Star Wars thoughts and foibles, and for Ryan Jackson and the movie series he's about to shoot, and all of us here at Force Center. Thank you so much. This was Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.